This is the Inland Journal from Spokane Public Radio. I'm Doug Nadvornik. The biggest chunk of the Spokane County budget, about three-fourths, goes for criminal justice. Your tax money pays to put deputies on the streets, for detectives who investigate crimes, for jailers and nurses to oversee inmates in the jail, for the prosecutors, public defenders, and judges who try cases in the courts. Spokane County Commissioner Al French says the criminal justice budget is relatively stable, yet there are still significant challenges. The jail population is about double of what Spokane's 35-year-old facility was built to handle. In a few minutes, we'll talk with Al French about the debate over a new jail and other issues related to criminal justice. But first, there's a new program just up and running in Spokane aimed at reducing that jail population. It's focused on the people who can't afford to post bail.
When bail was actually created, it was supposed to be set in an amount that the accused could pay.
That's Robin Steinberg, the CEO of a nonprofit organization known as the Bail Project.
The theory was if the amount was the correct amount somebody could pay, it would give them some skin in the game, right? Because their money would be at stake, and that would be the incentive for them to come back to court.
Instead, she says many jurisdictions set bail at such high amounts that many people can't pay, so they sit in court until trial. Those who do have their lives put on hold. Many lose their jobs and their housing, and their families are thrown into disarray. Spokane County says three-fourths of the inmates in the county jail fit into the pre-trial category. This is not a Spokane-specific situation. More than 10 years ago, advocates in the Bronx, New York, decided to create a revolving fund that would provide bail for low-level defendants so they could go back into the community and continue their lives while they wait for trial. Steinberg says it proved so successful that those advocates wanted to know if the idea would work elsewhere.
Last January, we launched the Bail Project, which is our national effort to scale what we learned at the revolving fund at the Bronx Freedom Fund into a national not-for-profit organization that will scale across the country, providing bail relief to tens of thousands of people.
The Lilac City is becoming the 11th Bail Project site in the nation. Daryl McAdoo has been leading the effort to set it up here.
This was not a site that was originally on our radar, but group of community leaders from Spokane were already thinking about starting their own bail fund, and they went to visit one of our sites in Louisville. I happened to meet them there, and we connected.
Eventually, a partnership was born. On Friday, McAdoo and a handful of other Bail Project employees, including Angel Tommy O'Sam, gathered in the lobby of the Spokane County Jail.
Today we are waiting in the jail for some folks, our clients, that we have interviewed and decided to bail them out of jail. They are folks who would otherwise not be able to afford bail to get out and fight their case from the outside.
Of the four people released, one is a young Native American woman who had a warrant out for her arrest. Tommy O'Sam says the woman is getting her life together and working toward her GED. Another is a college student from Yakima who came to Spokane for the holidays and wound up arrested in a family dispute. One by one, they emerge. They're offered lunch and a few other simple creature comforts. McAdoo and others tell them the story about the Bail Project and why they were chosen. Angel Tommy O'Sam holds the title of Bail Disruptor. She identifies potential clients in the jail, interviews them, makes arrangements for them to be taken home, and helps with other life-related details. This work is personal for her. Tommy O'Sam was herself once incarcerated. Now she's a community activist who believes jail is not an effective way to help troubled people overcome their problems.
You know, add the overcrowding, and, you know, being away from friends and family and your community and away from resources, you know, there's really not much you can do, you know, especially if you're set with these issues, you know, substance abuse or homelessness, you know. This isn't a remedy for either one of those.
Sam and her fellow bail disruptor Sabrina Ryan will apply Bail Project rules that govern which people they choose for whom to post bail. Those rules are explained here by Daryl McAdoo.
Are you having a problem with coming up with the money yourself? Is your bail low enough to where we can pay it and then it does not cause a substantial financial burden for our revolving fund. And then three, do you have contact information that we can verify and give us some type of sense that you are willing and desire to come back to court?
McAdoo and Bail Project CEO Robin Steinberg say the project will consider people facing bail of $5,000 or less.
We are looking to make sure that we're identifying people where we have effective ways to notify them of the next court date. We're looking to see whether our bail disruptors and advocates can support people and connect them to voluntary services they may need in the community. We're looking to see what the results on their case outcomes are. Research is pretty clear, and the data from our Bronx Freedom Fund is pretty clear, that when somebody gets bail paid, their case dispositions wind up being much more positive, and that leads to more positive life outcomes.
Christina Camcozzi says incarceration is not just a criminal justice issue, it's also a public health issue. Camcozzi is the Empire Health Foundation's liaison to the Bail Project in Spokane.
We want to start going upstream rather than treating the symptoms, so people have a chance to be productive members of society.
Camcozzi says the foundation will help fund some of the community services for Bail Project clients. It will also work with Whitworth University to help track their lives during the time during and after their court cases are resolved to find out whether the bail investments were good ones. The Bail Project expects to become fully operational in Spokane right after the new year. And now to Spokane County Commissioner Al French, who's also chairman of the county's Law and Justice Council. He's been kind enough to interrupt his vacation for a few minutes to talk with us. So the county's in the last few months of a MacArthur Foundation grant, about $1.75 million, private money, to take a look at the county's criminal justice system. What has been accomplished with that, and is that kind of line up with what the county had hoped to accomplish with it?
So the intent of the grant money is, there are a number of communities across the country that were identified as pilot communities to test a number of different systems to try and improve the criminal justice system. And we were one of those communities that was identified as a test community. And so we've instituted a number of different programs as a result of the grant. Some were successful, some were not. One of those programs that was not successful was what we called the SAFER tool, or a tool that provides the judge with assessment of risk of reappearance of an individual that has been brought up on charges. You know, a lot of times a judge has a defendant in front of them, but doesn't have all of the information, all of the tools to be able to assess risk as to whether that individual can come back or will reappear or not. And so in the absence of that information, a lot of times is forced error on the side of caution, and so somebody might be incarcerated when in fact they might not represent any risk. And so we worked with the Washington State University to try and develop a new tool to accomplish that. The tool was developed but wasn't shown to be as effective as some other tools that were developed by other communities, and so we've abandoned that effort and are now in the final stages of acquiring a tool that actually was put into place in Yakima and has proved to be very good tool for the judges and stuff. So, you know, the goal is to try different systems, and the best one will emerge, and then all the communities can move to that, the best practice. And so that's the goal of that effort and stuff. So that's just one example of a tool now. Another program is what we call UpTrust, which is, you know, like if you have a doctor's appointment, you know, the doctor will send you a text message or a voicemail saying, you know, don't forget your appointment to make sure that you appear. Well, we have what's called failure to appears with the criminal justice system. So if you've got a court date and you're scheduled to appear before the judge and you don't, then that's called a failure to appear, and a warrant can be issued for your arrest. Well, you might not make that appearance because either your employer didn't allow you to take time off or your babysitter canceled or a variety of different reasons and stuff. So that doesn't, because you didn't appear, doesn't necessarily mean that a warrant has to be issued for you, but there's nobody to intervene on your behalf. And so this UpTrust tool was a tool that was identified by Tom Kerminsky, our prosecutor, or a public defender, we've now started to implement that tool. The goal is if we can reduce the number of failures to appear, that reduces the number of warrants that will be issued by the bench, and it also makes the pathway to the criminal justice system an easier path to pursue. So there's a number of different programs that we work with to try and make the system better, not only from a humanity standpoint. You obviously don't want people in jail that don't need to be in jail, but also to make the system work more efficiently.
As you look back on the MacArthur Foundation grant, how would you evaluate how well it's worked and what has been accomplished in Spokane County? Are there areas in the criminal justice system you think are significantly better because of the MacArthur Foundation grant?
I think what the MacArthur Foundation grant has been able to accomplish for us is it compares us against our peers. And when we compare ourselves against our peers, we're doing very, very well. But we still have a lot of work to do. And so it's helping us to identify those areas of weakness in the system and those areas of opportunities where we might be able to continue to work to reduce not only the number of inmates that we have in the jail, but also reduce the amount of time that somebody finds himself engaged in the criminal justice system. For instance, the minute somebody is arrested, how long does it take until they get that first appearance before a judge? How long does it take before they get the second appearance or get themselves established on a pathway to success? And so it's been very beneficial in the terms of identifying those opportunities for us where we can improve. And we've already got some programs that are in place or being set up to achieve that we might not have been able to be aware of had it not been for the MacArthur grant.
So we note from county statistics, looking at one of the graphs on the county website, that somewhere between 80 and 85% of the people who are in the jail are not sentenced. They're waiting some sort of trial or some sort of is. Do you hope to significantly reduce that number of 80 to 85% to something much lower?
Well, that's one of the goals of the risk assessment tool, is that if we can make an early determination as to whether an individual will in fact appear before the judge, then they don't need to be in jail. And so how can we identify those that can be released on their own recognizance or released with supervision until their court appearance date comes up? And so, yes, the goal is to try and reduce that population of folks that are in the jail waiting to be arraigned before the judge.
We're talking with Spokane County Commissioner Al French about spending for criminal justice.
And on the county jail, we only incarcerate people that have sentences a year or less. Anything greater than a year actually goes to the state penitentiary. So whoever ends up on our jail will ultimately be back in our community. And so how do we put into place the tools necessary to help them be successful once they're back into the community? And along that line, we've got a number of partnerships where we've worked with other groups in the community to try and do job training. And so when somebody comes out of the jail, they have a skill that will allow them to become gainfully employed. And with that employment then comes the financial resources necessary to allow them to sustain themselves. One of those really successful programs is a training with the Associated General Contractors trains individuals that are incarcerated in the construction trades so that when they are released back in the community, they can go into a very good paying job and have the financial resources to be successful. And our recidivism rate in that program is now down to 5%. That means that out of all those people that have been incarcerated and released out in the community that have received this training, only 5% of them find themselves back into the criminal justice system, where, you know, if you take somebody that's been incarcerated in the system and has not received that training, our recidivism rate is up to around 40 to 50%. So that's a very good success. And so how do we build on that success?
You talked about some of these other diversion programs, and does the county have the money looking ahead, facing fiscal pressures in past years, to continue to expand those types of programs? And can you make the case that they're really worth the money?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and it's one of the challenges that we face is that, you know, from a financial standpoint, the last place that we want somebody is in our jail. The jail is for people that, in my opinion, are going to cause bodily harm to an individual, or they're going to create or cause property damage. Other crimes, there are other paths that we can put people in, and especially those that find themselves in the system because they feel like they've run out of options and stuff. So the city of Spokane is now got a program in sight that's over on East 2nd Avenue where we have all of the social programs, agents from all those different social programs that are out there in one location, where before you might have to go to half a dozen to a dozen different locations to try and get access to all the resources you need. Well, if we can put those all in one location, so it's kind of a one-stop shop, that we can then provide a foundation that will allow people to be successful. And so we're trying that in partnership with the city, and if that's successful, then that will allow us to incorporate that as part of the criminal justice system. The other thing that we are now looking for a location for is a mental health crisis stabilization facility. So, again, going back to if somebody is mentally ill and just out of medications, instead of putting them in jail, can we put them into a crisis stabilization facility, get them medicated, and get them back on their feet, and to administer that program before they're ever in the criminal justice system?
So as we look into 2019, how is the urgency for a new facility going to play out over this next year, do you think?
Well, I know that I'm working with the city, and we would like to have a proposal for a new facility before the community next year. That's the top priority for us.
Next year is in 2019 or 2020?
2019.
Okay.
But 2019, we want to have a proposal in front of the voter if, in fact, we have to go for outside financing, or is it a facility that we might be able to pay out of different resources just by rechanneling them? We don't know that question yet, but we're finding the answers and stuff. The other critical element of this is, what is the right size for the new jail to be built? And this is a very fundamental question that has to be asked and answered by this community. And as I engage with stakeholders across the realm as it wants to deal with the criminal justice system, I've got some folks that are saying, just close the jail up, send everybody to programs and be done with it. And then I've got other folks that are saying, build that jail. And I've actually been in a room with 500 people chanting, build that jail, because for them, it's a matter of safety, public safety and stuff. So I've got the whole realm covered. Now, how do I take that emotion? And that's what a lot of that is. It's emotion about their own safety and consolidate that into a number that the community can support to move forward with. Is it 500? Is it 1,000? Is it 2,000? I'm all over the spectrum. And so I chair another committee called the Facility Subcommittee, where we are challenging ourselves with how do we identify a process that everybody can buy into that says whatever that number is, that's the number we're going to support. And then it incorporates the viewpoints of all of these different stakeholders to try and identify what's that right size for that facility for not only today, but for the next 30 or 40 years. Because the last time we built a jail in the mid-80s, here we are now in almost 2000 or 2020, and are now looking to replace it. So the jail is something that's going to last for decades. How do we make sure that we right-size it out of the gate to be able to accomplish that? So that'll be one of the top priorities we're engaged in for 2019.
Do you think there's consensus even among the criminal justice system as to what kind of jail is going to be the best fit for Spokane County?
No. No, I don't. And that's part of the debate. I know that the majority of folks engaged in the system say we need a new jail. The jail in its current configuration consumes resources. Those resources are dollars in a very ineffectual fashion. If we can have a facility that is easy and economical to operate, we can take those dollars and spend them on how do we keep people out of jail.
Is there even consensus over the fact that the jail population is too high right now?
Oh, I think everybody recognizes the jail population is too high. And the mix of folks that are in the jail, like you said, you know, a significant number of them are just waiting for that first court appearance. And so how do we get those folks out of the jail and into, supervised a situation or some other kind of treatment facility so that the people that are in the jail, like I said earlier, the people that are in the jail are those that would either do you or your family bodily harm or damage your property. Those are the people that need to be separated from society. Other folks that are in the jail because of misdemeanors or a variety of other things, how do we get them back out in the community so that it's less expensive to be able to administer them until they finalize their experience with the criminal justice system?
Well, let me finish with this one. How do you think the opioid epidemic, and I only use that because that's a term that has been attached to the opioid situation in the United States, how do you think that situation has affected the county's criminal justice system? Has it significantly added to that jail population because of that situation?
It has added to the jail population, but the other thing is it's added a whole nother level of risk in the jail. Folks that are incarcerated but are addicted to the opioids no longer have access to it, and so then they end up going into a forced withdrawal. And from what I understand, the withdrawal process can be pretty severe, and for some individuals it's severe enough to where death is a more attractive option than going through the withdrawals. And we have had a couple people in the jail this last year that were addicted to opioids that went in withdrawals, ended up committing suicide. And that's obviously not an acceptable outcome. And so we've changed our protocols in the jail. We've changed the drugs that we administer to help people get through their withdrawals, and we've changed the level of medical attention that these folks get. So all of that comes with cost, and so that's another financial burden onto the system. But, you know, it's one of those things you have to do to make sure that folks that are in your custody are safe.
We've been talking with Spokane County Commissioner Al French. In 3 weeks, Inland Journal will come back to criminal justice. We'll talk with Maggie Yates, who is the administrator for the county's Law and Justice Council, and a member of that council, Superior Court Judge Marianne Moreno. Next week on the program, we talk with Spokane area state legislators, one of them elected for the first time, to find out how they're preparing for the legislative session that's due to begin in Olympia on January 14th. One will give us a civics lesson about introducing, working, and passing legislation. Speaking of Olympia, we want to alert you to a new program that will be on the KSFC schedule in January. Our state capitol correspondent, Austin Jenkins, hosts an hour-long interview program called Inside Olympia on the TVW cable channel. And we will begin to air that program Sunday mornings at 7, beginning January 6th on KSFC. Inland Journal is Spokane Public Radio's weekly public affairs program. We welcome your comments at inlandjournal@kpbx.org or at our listener line at 509-232-6904. Thank you for your support of the program and the radio station. I'm Doug Nadvornik.